And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Yeah, sometimes when you go ghost hunting, you get things you don't anticipate. A couple of teenagers heard that there had been a ghost seen at El Paso High School. Looking out one of the windows. So they went over there and parked out in front of the school. Been there a few minutes, somebody tapped on their window. They opened it, got a gun stuck in their face, and they got robbed by a young man in his 20s. So sometimes you get more than you anticipate when you go ghost hunting. Well, today is September 15th, the 258th day of the year. The leap year is 259th. Only 107 days left to the end of the year. This date in history has been quite interesting. 994, there was a major Fatimid victory over the Byzantine Empire at the Battle of the Orontes. 1440, Charles de Reyes, who's one of the earliest known serial killers, is taken into custody upon an accusation brought against him by Jean de Malestroit, Bishop of Nantes. Now, the interesting thing about Giles de Reyes, he was actually a baron. He was a knight and lord from Brittany, Anjou and Poitou, a leader in the French army, and he'd been a close companion of Joan of Arc. Well, he wound up being a confessed serial killer. His favorite victims were children. He died in Nantes in October 26, 1440. Now, in 1434, 1435, he retired from military life. And even though he's an extremely wealthy individual, he spent it in extravagant theatrical escapades, spectacles of his own composition. Even accused of dabbling in the occult. Well, there was an ecclesiastical investigation that brought his crimes to light. His own confederates testified against him. He was condemned to death and hung at Nantes, October 26, 1440. He's believed to be the inspiration for the French folktale Bluebeard, which was the earliest recording of that was in 1697. All right, in 1530, the appearance of the miraculous portrait of St. Dominic in Soriano, Calabria, Italy, commemorated as a feast day by the Roman Catholic Church up until 1912. 1556, departing from Vicingen, ex-Holy Roman Emperor Charles V returns to Spain. 1762, Seven Years' War, Battle of Signal Hill, which was quite a epic battle. 1776, American Revolutionary War. British forces land at Kipps Bay during the New York campaign. 1789, U.S. Department of Foreign Affairs, established by law in July, is renamed the Department of State and given a variety of domestic duties. 1794, French Revolutionary War. Arthur Wellesley, later the Duke of Wellington, sees his first combat at the Battle of Boxtel during the Flanders campaign. 1795, Britain seizes the Dutch Cape Colony in southern Africa to prevent its use by the Batavian Republic. Now, for those that are not familiar with the Batavian Republic, it was the successor to the Republic of the Seven United Netherlands. It was created January 19, 1795, ended June 5, 1806. When Louis I went to the throne of Holland. It was also known as the Batavian Commonwealth. Both names refer to the Germanic tribe of the Batavi, representing both the Dutch ancestry and their ancient quest for liberty and their nationalistic stories. It was a revolutionary unitary republic. And, of course, they were willing to to fight. Okay, so 1812, the Grand Army under Napoleon reaches the Kremlin in Moscow. 1812, the War of 1812, second supply train sent to relieve Fort Harrison is ambushed in the attack at the Narrows. 1816, the HMS Whiting runs aground on the Doom Bar. And for those that are not familiar with the Doom Bar, also known as Dunbar Sands, it's a sandbar at the mouth of the estuary of the River Camel, where it meets the Celtic Sea on the north coast of Cornwall, England. And like two other permanent sandbanks further up the estuary, the Doom Bar is composed mainly of marine sand that's continually being carried up from the seabed. Okay, 1820, Constitutional Revolution in Lisbon, Portugal. 1821, the Captaincy General of the Guatemala declares independence from Spain. 1830, the Liverpool to Manchester Railway line opens. British MP William Huskisson becomes the first widely reported railway passenger fatality when he's struck and killed by the locomotive rocket. 1835, HMS Beagle with Charles Darwin on board reaches the Galapagos Island. Ship lands at Chatham or San Cristobal on the easternmost part of the archipelago. 1862, American Civil War. Confederate forces capture Harper's Ferry, Virginia. Present-day Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. 1873, Franco-Prussian War. Last Imperial German Army troops leave France on completion of the payment of the indemnity. 1894, First Sino-Japanese War. Japan defeats the Qing Dynasty of China in the Battle of Pyongyang. 1915, the Empire Picture Theater, now the new Empire Cinema, the oldest running cinema in mainland Australia, opens in Borol in New South Wales. 1916, World War I. Tanks are used for the first time in battle at the Battle of the Somme. 1918, World War I. Allied troops break through the Bulgarian defenses on the Macedonian front. 1935, the Nuremberg Laws deprived German Jews of citizenship. They were some of the most racist laws in history. 1935, Nazi Germany adopts a new national flag bearing the swastika. 1940, World War II, the climax of the Battle of Britain when the Luftwaffe launches its largest and most concentrated attack of the entire campaign. 1942, World War II, U.S. Navy aircraft carrier Wasp is sunk by the Japanese at the Battle of Guadalcanal. The Japanese sank it with torpedoes. 1944, Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill meet in Quebec as part of the Octagon Conference to discuss strategy. 1944, Battle of Waterloo begins as the U.S. Marine Corps' 1st Marine Division and U.S. Army's 81st Infantry Division hit White and Orange beaches under heavy fire from Japanese infantry and artillery. 1945, hurricane strikes southern Florida and the Bahamas. Destroys 366 airplanes and 25 blimps at Naval Air Station Richmond. 1947, Typhoon Kathleen hits the Kanto region in Japan. Kills 1,077 people. 1948, the Indian Army captures the town of Jalna, Latur, Mormonabad, Surapet, and Narkapali as part of the Operation Polo. Now, that was the code name of the Hyderabad police action by the then newly independent Dominion of India against Hyderabad State. Military operation which the Indian Armed Forces invaded the Nizam-ruled princely state, annexing it into the Indian Union. Basically, it was an internal dispute that got extremely bloody. All right, 1948, the F-86 Sabre sets the world aircraft speed record at 671 miles an hour. 1950, Korean War. U.S. 10th Corps lands at Incheon. 1952, United Nations cedes Eritrea to Ethiopia. 1958, Central Railroad of New Jersey commuter train runs through an open drawbridge at Newark Bay. 48 people die. 1959, Nikita Khrushchev becomes the first Soviet leader to ever visit the U.S. 1962, the Soviet ship Batalva heads towards Cuba. One of the events that sets in motion the Cuban Missile Crisis. 1963, Baptist Church bombing. Four children killed in the bombing of an African-American church in Birmingham, Alabama. 1967, Lyndon Johnson, responding to a sniper attack at the University of Texas, Austin, writes a letter to Congress urging the enactment of gun control legislation. He'd do better to control the nuts. You can make a gun. 1968, the Soviet Zond 5 spaceship is launched, becoming the first spacecraft to finally land on the moon and re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. 1971, the first Greenpeace ship departs from Vancouver to protest against the upcoming Kanakan nuclear weapons test in Alaska. 1972, a Scandinavian Airlines system domestic flight from Gothenburg to Stockholm is hijacked and flown to Malmö Butofta Airport. 1974, Air Vietnam Flight 706 is hijacked and crashes while attempting to land with 75 people on board. 1975, the French Department of Corse, that's the entire island of Corsica, is divided into two parts. Haute Corse, Upper Corsica, and Corsa du Sud, Southern Corsica. 1978, Muhammad Ali outpointed Leon Spinks in a rematch to become the first boxer to win the world heavyweight title three times at the Superdome in New Orleans. 1981, the Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously approved Sandra Day O'Connor to become the first female justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. I met her. Sure, not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And you needed to know somebody to get something to go in front of her. 1981, the John Bull becomes the oldest operable steam locomotive in the world when the Smithsonian Institution operates it under its own power outside Washington, D.C. 1983, Israeli Premier Menachem Begin resigns. 2000, Summer Olympics, officially known as the Games of the 27th Olympiada, opened at Sydney, Australia. 2004, National Hockey League Commissioner Gary Bettman announces lockout of the players' union and cessation of operations by the NHL head office. 2008, Lehman Brothers files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, the largest bankruptcy filing in U.S. history. 2017, the Parson Green bombing takes place in London. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays. Battle of Britain Day in the UK. Christian Feast Day, Joseph Abed Bos Alpinus of Lyon. Empress of Toul, Catherine of Genoa, James Chisholm in the Episcopal Church, St. Dominic in Soriano, Maximilian of Palermo, Mamilian of Palermo, Mirren, Nicetus the Goth, Nicodemus, Our Lady of Sorrows, Cry of Dolores, celebrated on the eve of the Independence Day of Mexico, earliest day on which Father's Day can fall, September 21st is the latest, it's supposed to be the third Sunday in September in Ukraine, earliest day on which German-American Steuben Parade can fall, September 21st is the latest, celebrated on the third Saturday in September in the U.S., especially New York City, if anything is being celebrated in New York City now. Earliest day on which POW-MIA Recognition Day can fall, September 21st is the latest, celebrated on the third Friday in September in the U.S. Earliest day on which the prodigious dog can fall, September 21st is the latest, celebrated on the third Tuesday in September in the Netherlands. Earliest day on which the respect of the for the age day can fall, September 21st is the latest, celebrated on the third Monday in September in Japan, Engineers Day in India, Independence Day in Guatemala. It's celebrating independence from Spain in 1821 of Guatemala. It's celebrated in El Salvador and Honduras. Nicaragua and Costa Rica. International Day of Democracy. Knowledge Day in Azerbaijan. Restoration of Primorska to the Motherland Day in Slovenia. Silpa Biharesa Day in Thailand. Beginning of German-American Heritage Month. Celebrated until October 15th. Beginning of National Hispanic Heritage Month. Celebrated till October 15th in the U.S. And World Lymphoma Awareness Day internationally. And let's see what else we got. 1616, the first non-aristocratic free public school in Europe is opened in Frascati, Italy. 1821, Act of Independence of Central America. Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua declared independence from the Spanish Empire. 1928, Scottish bacteriologist Alexander Fleming discovers penicillin while studying influenza. Where's he when we need him? 1997, Google is registered as a domain name. Agatha Christie's birthday on this date. Marco Polo's birthday. William Howard Taft's birthday. Dan Marino's birthday. Prince Harry's birthday. In 1794, James Madison wed Dolly Madison in Jefferson County, West Virginia. 1949, figure skater and actress Sonia Henie married Winthrop Gardner Jr. on this date. 1951, Peter Sellers married actress Anne Howe in London. Johnny Ramone of the Ramones died on this date in 2004. Let's see what else we got. In 608, St. Boniface IV begins his reign as Catholic Pope. 668, Eastern Roman Emperor Constans II is assassinated at his bath at Syracuse, Italy. Now that is insulting when they get you in the shower. 921, St. Ludmilla is murdered at the command of her daughter-in-law at Tetten. 1514, Thomas Wolsey appointed English Archbishop of York. 1600, Battle of Sekigahara, rise of the Tokugawa shogunate in Japan. That was when they really began to be militaristic. 1621, Swedish troops occupy Riga. 1644, Giambattista Pamphili replaces Pope Urban VII as Pope Innocent X, and he was not innocent by any means. 1683, Germantown in Pennsylvania is founded by 13 immigrant families. 1707, Frederick Rakazi II, Prince of Transylvania, and Peter the Great, Tsar of Russia, signed the Social Security Agreement. 1777, George Washington, on the authorization of Congress, appointed Kazimierz Pulaski a brigadier general in the Continental Army Cavalry. 1846, Hung Bahadur Rana grabs power in Nepal. 1851, St. Joseph's University is founded in Philadelphia. 1853, first woman in the U.S. ordained a minister, Antoinette Blackwell. 1870, the Dutch First Chamber abolishes capital punishment. In 1870. Let's see if we got anything else. In 1917, Russia proclaimed a republic by Alexander Kerensky's provisional government. That did not last long. All right, I think we pretty much come to the end of the events that happened on this date in history. You know, we've been talking about strange encounters. Now let's talk about the children of the night. Those creatures who lurk in the shadows. You know they're there, but you really can't find them. You know, there have been a rash of sightings of what are known as unearthly cats, deadly dogs, and even werewolves. You know, for decades, the British Isles have played host to a decidedly mysterious marauding beast. It's been known as the alien big cat, or some call it the ABC. Now, some cryptozoologists, those that study cryptoids or cryptids, and monster hunters suggest that this is an even older entity, maybe even dating back centuries. Regardless of when or the controversy began, the fact is pretty much every year, dozens upon dozens of people report seeing huge cats roaming the wild and sometimes not so wild parts of Britain. Now, every so often, in fact, very often, the cats are described as being huge, muscular, and black, which has led a lot of people to call them Black Panthers, which is actually not correct. But the press, of course, they know better than anybody else. Be far more correct to suggest that these creatures are probably leopards and jaguars displaying significant melanism, a condition in which there's an excess of black pigment. Now, as for how these creatures have come to be seen across pretty much the entirety of the British Isles, there are a lot of theories. Some researchers believe the animals have escaped from private zoos and enclosures and are now living and thriving very nicely in the nation's woods and forest. Others suggest that back in 1976, when the British government altered the rules and regulations governing the keeping of large predatory animals, the owners of these cats, who couldn't afford to pay the new fees, secretly released their pets into the wild. And what people are seeing today, it's believed, are actually the descendants of these large cats that were set free back in 1970. Now, there are other theories that are even more controversial than that. One suggests they've been with us since about 43 A.D. when invading Roman forces brought large cats to Britain in the form of mascots. There are those that believe that some of these mascots escaped and managed to survive and breed largely undetected in the woodlands of England. And then there's the highly charged theory that Britain has in its midst an unidentified indigenous cat, one that science and zoologists have yet to recognize or even categorize. Now, whatever the answer to the question of the origin of the Britain's cats, the fact is their presence is pretty much accepted by the general public and the media, although largely not by the government, which prefers to downplay the matter and ignore it whenever possible. Now, these aren't literal monsters per se. They're simply regular animals, although seen in distinctly out-of-place environments. Of course, some might be categorized as monsters. My first mother-in-law would be categorized as a monster. Although many ABC researchers cringe and squirm when the matter is brought up, the fact is there are more than a few reports on record that put these creatures in a category that's less flesh-and-blood-based and far more paranormal. There are cases of these creatures literally vanishing before the eyes of astounded witnesses. People report large black cat encounters in old graveyards, within ancient stone circles, and sometimes, on a few occasions, in association with UFO sightings. Now, whatever the truth of the matter might be, they're not going away anytime soon. They're still going to be with us. Well, there have been reports of large black cats in both the U.S. and the U.K. As I say, they've been known as the alien big cats or the ABCs. Due to the fact they're seen in areas where they don't have any business actually being seen. After all, the U.K. is not normally known as the home to large cats like this. And these creatures in the U.S. are often spotted in areas where government officials maintain that these creatures don't roam. Well, we also have the interestingly curious stories coming out of Australia about these creatures. Now, this subject has for years typically only attracted the attention of what are referred to as cryptozoologists and monster hunters. But it came into the limelight in 2008 when the Australian government decided to make its thoughts and data on the subject known. In September of that year, Nathan Rees, the Premier of New South Wales, Australia, declared openly into the media that the stories of these creatures roaming the land were not the stuff of hoaxes and misidentification or fantasy. He said these large black cats really did exist, even if nobody knew exactly what they were. Well, notably, these statements were completely at odds with comments that he had made in August of 2008. When he essentially stated the subject had no merit whatsoever. You might ask what changed his opinion, and it turned out to be a large dossier of sightings in Australia collected by elements of the Australian government that was given to him in September of 2008, and which made for some impressive reading. It's because of his words that Australian officials decided rather than just collect these reports and file them away, they'd finally, investigate the reports. The program that focused on the state of Victoria, which is said to be a hotspot for these type of encounters, began in earnest in 2010 at the order of the Victorian National Party's Peter Ryan. 2 years later, on September 18, 2012, to be specific, the report was finally issued. And it wasn't the kind of thing that a lot of folks, particularly farmers who claim to have lost a substantial number of animals to these creatures, were anticipating or hoping for. The report, titled Assessment of Evidence for the Presence in Victoria of a Wild Population of Big Cats, concluded that there were no such creatures roaming around. Never mind the fact that the nation's farm animals were being killed indiscriminately. Minister for Agriculture and Food Security, Peter Walsh, tried to assure the skeptical public as well as the doubtful media that no big cats had ever been detected in a formal wildlife survey, shot by a hunter or farmer, or killed by a vehicle, and no skeletal remains had ever been found. Nor have these big cats ever been identified in wildlife studies involving the analysis of thousands of mammalian fecal samples. So then the question becomes, what were people seeing? According to Australian authorities, what folks were seeing were overfed regular cats that had turned feral. And a lot of folks who followed the story suggested and suspected the government was downplaying the matter to avoid panicking the population by admitting that large and dangerous cats were on the loose. But despite extensive criticism of the report, the Australian government was utterly unmoved. On the basis of the report's conclusion, further work focusing on obtaining primary evidence to conclusively rule out the existence of these big cats is not warranted, was the final decision of the government. And that's where matters stand today. Even though ranchers and members of the Australian public continue to see these creatures, and they see them on a disturbingly regular basis, and not just in Victoria, but all across Australia. So you have to ask yourself, can all these people be mistaken by nothing stranger than tubby feral cats? Australian authorities say, oh yes, definitely. The eyewitnesses, though, and hardly surprisingly, hold very different views. But unless something unforeseen occurs out of the blue, such as somebody killing or capturing one of these creatures, that situation is not going to change. From Australia, let's go to Wisconsin in the U.S. Since about 1991, Elkhorn, Wisconsin has been the lair and hunting ground of a creature that's the closest thing one can imagine to a real-life werewolf. And maybe that's what it is. The monster has become known as the Beast of the Bray Road on account of the fact that many of the initial sightings are made on Bray Road. Without doubt, the expert on all things of a lycanthropic nature in Wisconsin is Linda Godfrey, an author and a journalist. She's written a half a dozen books on werewolves, and according to her, the story first came to her attention in about 1991 from a woman who had heard rumors going around in Elkhorn, particularly in the high school. People were talking about seeing something that looked like a werewolf or a wolf-like creature, or maybe you might classify it as a wolf man. Not the type that did radio shows, by the way. They really didn't know what it was, but some were saying it was an honest-to-God werewolf. It was being called a werewolf because folks didn't know what else to call it. Well, Linda Godfrey started checking it out, talked to the editor of the local newspaper, and in fact, she used to work there. And he said, well, why don't you go check around a little bit and see what you can find out? This was the December 1991. And being a weekly newspaper, they weren't really reporting hard news. They were more a feature-oriented paper. So she asked a friend who had a daughter in high school, and she said, oh yeah, that's what everybody's talking about. So she got the name from the woman who had told her about it, and who turned out to be a part-time bus driver. She said, on my first phone call to the bus driver, she told me she'd called the county animal control officer. Well, when you're a reporter, you look for a chance to get something official when you're working on a story. So she went to see him, and sure enough, he had a folder in his file drawer. He had actually marked werewolf. He said people had been phoning in to him to say that they'd seen something. They didn't know what it was, but from their descriptions, that's what it seemed to be. So certainly this made a news story. We've got a public official, the county animal control officer, who has a file marked werewolf. Well, that's news, and news that certainly is worthy of a story. So her project took off from there, and she kept finding more and more witnesses. Well, at first, they all wanted to stay private. She remembered talking about it with the editor, and they thought they'd run the story anyway because it'd be over in a couple of weeks. And then the story got picked up by the Associated Press. And once it hit the AP wire, everything broke loose and people started going crazy. All the Milwaukee TV stations came out and did stories, dug until they found the witnesses and got them to change their minds and go on camera, which, of course, some of them later regretted. And of course, Linda Godfrey wasn't happy about it because it made them reluctant to talk to her. When you talk about something strange on TV camera, you get all the lunatics coming out of the woodwork. Now, all these folks were mostly saying they'd seen something that was much larger than normal, sometimes on two legs, sometimes four, and it had a head like a wolf. Some described it as a German shepherd-like head, pointed ears, very long, coarse, shaggy, wild-looking fur. And one thing they all mentioned was that it would turn and look at them and gaze fearlessly at them. And it was at that point they all got really frightened. Everybody had seen it with the exception of one. Has been extremely scared because it's so far out of the ordinary. They couldn't identify it, and it didn't appear to be afraid of them. So that's the makings of a problem right there. It would just casually turn around and wander off into the brush. It was never just out in the opening, out in the open, where he didn't have some sort of hiding place. There's always a cornfield or brush or some woods nearby. And that was pretty much the start of the story. And once that got out, she started finding other people who called her and got in touch with her, and she sort of became the unofficial clearinghouse. They started to call it the Beast of Bray Road because she really didn't want to call it a werewolf. The original sightings were in an area known as the Beast of Bray Road, which was just outside of Elkhorn. And everybody seemed to have an opinion about what this thing was, and they wanted to make their opinion known and then defend it. Well, she personally didn't think there were enough facts for anybody to come to a conclusion. She had reports of a couple of dozen sightings. A few were secondhand and dated back as far as 1936, and they weren't all around Bray Road. In fact, quite a number were in the next county, which was Jefferson County. She had a woman write her and insisted it was just a wolf. And a lot of folks seemed to subscribe to that theory. It's definitely a wolf, can't be anything else, but that doesn't explain why it's so big. Well, they had all sorts of theories. Mental patients escaping, some crazy guy running around, a hoaxer wearing a costume. One or two could have been that, but she tended to have her doubts about that because the incidents were isolated, not close enough together. Now, one of the sightings was on Halloween, but it's also one of the people who got really a good look at it, and they sure it wasn't human in a costume. Otherwise, most of the sightings were in remote areas where if you were going to conduct a hoax, folks would have to have been sitting out there in the cold just waiting for somebody to come along. So if it is somebody running a hoax, he's a dedicated hoaxer. But Linda Godfrey didn't think it was a hoax. She didn't rule it out completely because once publicity got started, things like that can happen. Then she got the story about two hunters quite a bit further north who saw what looked like two dog children standing in the woods. They were too scared to shoot when they saw them. So they weren't tall. They were juvenile-looking, standing upright. And that's what scared them. But otherwise, most of the stories deal with a single creature. And most of the sightings she received weren't recent, so people can't remember too well what the moon was like. But most of the sightings occur around the fall when the cornfields get big and a lot of really good hiding places. It's anywhere from late August through November. She's also had some sightings from the spring, but there are other theories as well for what's going on. She would occasionally get letters from people who say they're lycanthropes themselves, and their theory is this was an immature real werewolf and it can't control its transformation. And that's why it allows itself to be seen occasionally. They seem to be absolutely convinced about that. And there are people who believe it's a manifestation of satanic forces, that it's part of a demonic thing. They point to a lot of occult activities around that area. And there are folks who try to link it to UFOs. Then you have the theory it's just a big dog. One woman who said she was a medium thought it was a natural animal, but didn't know what it was. And there's a lot of folks out there that do wolf dog hybridizations. And certainly that would cause something similar to what we've seen. But that didn't explain the upright posture. Then there's the story that it's a creature known as a Wendigo, which is featured in Indian legends, supposedly a supernatural creature that lives on human flesh. But none of the descriptions from Wendigo legends talk about the creature having canine features. Now, there's another possibility. People see different things, and then they hear somebody else talking about something. There's a tendency to say, oh, that must be what I saw. And there's really no way to know, and there are differences in some of the sightings. Some folks are sure it's a Bigfoot, but that doesn't really seem to be what it is. There's one man who saw it in the 1960s in a different area of the county who insists positively what he saw was a Bigfoot and didn't want anybody saying he saw a werewolf. Well, the terrain around here isn't really the typical sort of Bigfoot terrain of forest where people usually report seeing these things. There are woods in a big state forest, but it's a narrow band of forest. A lot of prairie, and it's not what you'd think a Bigfoot would want to live in. But then again, you don't know. Then there's been the theory it's a baboon, which is probably rather unlikely. On the first book on the subject, which was called The Beast of Bray Road, Godfrey said, part of the angle of the book is looking for this at this from a sociological phenomenon and how something that a number of people see turn into a legend. And it has become that. It's a, I guess you could say, an open mystery, so to speak. Well, 25 years after her investigation into the mystery of the Beast of Bray Road, Linda Godfrey's research and writing continue, and sightings of the creature continue. She's written several books. Collectively, they demonstrate something incredible. Now, werewolves may not be totally creatures of fantasy, legend, and mythology. They just might be real. And Bray Road might be where one or more of them hangs out. Now, leaving Elkhorn, let's go back to the UK for a minute. Now, the UK is home to a wealth of strange, extraordinary animals, including alien big cats, the Loch Ness Monster, the big gray man of Ben McHui. Then there's the matter of the nation's werewolves. Reports of British wolfmen date back more than 1,000 years and contain the key and staple ingredients of so many werewolf reports. Shape-shifting during a full moon, and even the use of silver bullets. I mean, where do you think the Lone Ranger got the idea? Well, any reports of werewolves in the UK date from long ago. That's certainly not always the case. Take, for example, the matter of a certain wave of werewolf sightings that occurred in central England in 2007. And this wave of sightings attracted the attention of not just the general public, but the local and national media as well. Now, it's intriguing to note that each and every encounter with the marauding man-wolf occurred in and around the very same place. A cemetery located in central England's expansive woods known as the Cannock Chase. The Commonwealth War Graves Commission noted that during the First World War, there was a large military camp at Cannock Chase that became the base for the New Zealand Rifle Brigade. And there was a prisoner of war hospital there that had 1,000 beds in both camp and hospital, used the burial ground. Cannock Chase War Cemetery contains 97 Commonwealth burials of the First World War, most of them from New Zealand, and 286 German burials. And there were also 3 burials from the Second World War. The 58 German burials in Plot 4 were all brought into the cemetery in 1963 as part of the German government's policy to remove all graves situated in cemeteries or war graves plots not maintained by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. As for the monster that seems to hang around these graves, it became briefly infamous in April of 2007. Thanks to a story that appeared in the pages of the local Stafford Post newspaper. According to the newspaper staff, a rash of sightings of a werewolf-type creature prowling around the outskirts of Stafford have prompted a respected Midlands paranormal group to come investigate. The West Midlands Ghost Club says they've been contacted by a number of shocked residents who saw what they claim to be a hairy wolf-type creature walking on its hind legs around the German War Cemetery just off Camp Road. Now, this is located in between Stafford and Cannock. Several of them claim the creature sprang up on its hind legs and ran into the nearby bushes when it was spotted. Now, Nick Duffy of the West Midlands Ghost Club is a person that brought the story to the attention of the newspaper. It was the West Midlands Ghost Club that was a recipient of the initial bunch of reports. According to Duffy, the first person to contact him was a postman who said he'd seen what he thought was a werewolf on the German War Cemetery site. He said he was over there on a motorbike and saw what he believed was a large dog. When he got closer, the creature got up on his hind legs and ran away. Then it was also a Cannock-based scout leader who had an encounter with the creature, and it was right in the center of the cemetery. He said it just looked like a huge dog, but when I slammed the door of my car, it got up on its back legs and ran into trees.
Must have been about 6 or 7 feet tall. I know it sounds crazy, but I know what I saw. Was the publicity given to these two cases in particular that prompted additional people to come forward with their sighting reports and theories as to what might have been going on? Of a mysterious and disturbing series of missing animals in the area, one source told the newspaper, it's a fact that there have been significant mining activity under the Cannock Chase for centuries. And it's a fact that there's a high rate of domestic pet disappearance in the area, especially dogs. Just ask anybody who walks their dog near the German War Cemetery. And it is interesting to note that although 2007 wave captured significant attention for a period of no less than 3 or 4 months, the area very briefly hit by a similar wave in the previous year, 2006. Early in June, in fact, on June 28, 2006, numerous motorists driving to work on the M6 motorway reported seeing a large wolf-like creature racing along the 6 lanes of the motorway during rush hour of all times. The highway agency looked into the matter quickly, and it was concerned, of course. They drew a blank. Well, the local press, ask anybody and everybody who remotely associated with the odd to look into it. Now, there's been a number of sightings reported as well. And they were all pretty much the same. And the location was the same, the old cemetery. The nature of the creature was the same. Ability to run on both forelegs and two, and when standing on its hind legs, it reached a height of about 7 feet. And there was something else as well. All the witnesses had the feeling, and they couldn't say why they had this feeling, that the creature was both supernatural and downright evil. In addition, a wave of publicity given to the 07 encounters encouraged some people to come forward with reports that predated the current encounters. Certainly the most fascinating account, according to the press, came from a man named Jim Broadhurst. According to Broadhurst, on a bright summer day in late June of 06, he and his wife were taking a leisurely, pleasant walk through Cannock Chase Woods when they saw, and what he thought was about 150 feet, a very large wolf making its way through the trees. Broadhurst said the initial amazement and excitement that he and his wife had experienced were replaced by nothing less than cold-hearted fear. And there was a very good reason for that fear. The animal suddenly got up on its hind legs and stared intently in the direction of the couple, making it abundantly clear it had seen them. And as Broadhurst speculated, the animal wanted to let them know it had seen them. And as they watched, frozen in there to the spot, the wolf backed away further into the heart of the woods, keeping its eyes firmly fixed on the couple until it was finally out of sight. Well, the Broadhurst, understandably, I'm sure, wasted not a second fleeing the area and getting in the safety of their car. They didn't talk about it until 2007 when the similar events prompted him to speak out publicly. Now, there hadn't been any reported human casualties regarding this interesting affair, and sightings of the cemetery werewolf finally faded away as the summer of 2007 became the autumn, as the days became shorter and the nights became longer. Nobody ever really determined what the creature was, where it came from, or where it went to. For people who live in the vicinity of the Cannock Chase German War Cemetery, it's likely to be a mayhem-filled few months that they'll never forget. I mean, it's not every day you find a real-life werewolf living right there in the midst. You know, I've long had a fascination with the strange and the unusual, and I'm not the only one. One individual I've read a good bit about is the Reverend Sabine Baring Gould. You know, he died in 1924. And he was somebody who had a deep fascination for stories about strange creatures, especially werewolves, ghouls, and the menacing phenomena known as the Eiger Einheimer.
According to Baron Gould, that's a hyphenated name, don't you know? In Norway and Iceland, certain men are said to be... excuse me. Certain men are said to be Aggie Einheimer, not of one skin, which has its roots, of course, in paganism. The full form of this superstition was that men could take upon himself other bodies and the natures of those beings whose bodies they assumed. The second adopted shape was called by the same name as the original shape, Hammer, H-M-R, an expression made use to designate the transition from one body to another. Was at Skipta Humtum, or at Hamaz, while the expedition made in the second form was Hamfer. But this transfiguration, extraordinary powers were gained. The natural strength of the individual involved was doubled or quadrupled, and he got the strength of the beast in whose body he now traveled. And the question became how this change could come about. According to Baron Gould, the manner in which the change is affected varies. At times, a dress of skin was put over the body. And I've heard legends about belts that would give you the ability to change into a werewolf at the full moon. And then once the transformation was complete, and at others, the human body was deserted and the soul entered the second form, leaving the first body in a cataleptic state. Now, having assumed some bestial shape, the man who has made that change is only to be recognized by his eyes, which no power, according to Baron Gould, could change. And then he pursues his course, follows the instinct of the beast whose body he's taken, but he still has the human intelligence. Well, let's talk about a werewolf by the name of Fenrir. Now, Dion Fortune was an occultist, a mystic, and author of a number of books. The real name was Violet Mary Firth. Fortune, who died in 1946 at the age of 55, was somebody who was skilled at creating monsters in the mind and who could then unleash them into the world around her. Made it very clear, though, that creating a mind monster rarely has a positive outcome. It's something each and every one of us should take careful heed of. And she told an interesting story. Excuse me. She said the artificial elemental was constructed by forming a clear-cut image in the imagination of the creature it's intended to create. Ensouling it with something of the corresponding aspect of one's own being, then invoking into it the appropriate natural force. Now, this method can be used for both good as well as evil, and the guardian angels are formed in this way. It's said that dying women, anxious and concerned about the welfare of their children, frequently form them unconsciously. She said, I myself once had an extremely nasty experience in which I formulated a werewolf accidentally. And unpleasant as the incident was, she said, I think it may be just as well to give it publicly, for it shows what may happen when an insufficiently disciplined and purified nature is handling occult forces. She said, I received some serious injuries from someone who at considerable cost to myself. I disinterestedly helped, and I was sorely tempted to retaliate. Lying on my bed, resting one afternoon, I was brooding over my resentment, and while brooding, drifted toward the borders of sleep. And there came to my mind a thought of casting off all restraints and going literally berserk. The ancient Nordic myths rose before me, and I thought of Fenrir, the wolf horror of the north. Immediately, I felt a curious drawing-out sensation from my solar plexus, and there materialized beside me on the bed a large wolf. It was
well materialized ectoplasmic form. It was gray and colorless and had weight, and I could distinctly feel its back pressing against me as it lay beside me on the bed as a large dog might. She said I knew nothing about the sort of making elementers about the art of making elementals at the time, but had accidentally stumbled upon the right method. And brooding, highly charged with emotion, the invocation of the appropriate natural force and condition between sleeping and waking, which the etheric double readily extrudes. If, in fact, she could create the creature in her mind and give it form and give it life, that does raise interesting questions. Very. Well, let's talk about going back to southern Devon in England. The glowing monster of the cliffs. Throughout the summer and fall of 1997, the skies of this area were filled with UFOs, bizarre aerial vehicles, and mystifying lights. A lot of strange creatures, including large black cats resembling mountain lions, flying beasts that looked like huge jellyfish, and ghostly black dogs with blazing evil-filled eyes, provoked terror in all that came in contact with them. And then unidentified robed and hooded figures were seen prowling around local woods by moonlight, thought by the locals to be engaged in infernal occult-driven rites and rituals. Animals were found dead and hideously mutilated under mysterious circumstances. While trying to make sense of all this strangeness of the very disturbing kind, were two investigators named Nigel Wright and John Downs. Now, Wright's a well-known, long-time investigator of UFOs in England. Downs is the director of the Devon-based Center for Fortean Knowledge, one of the few groups that investigates reports of such things as lake monsters, Bigfoot, and the Chupacabra on a full-time basis. Now, Charles Fort, for those that are not familiar, collected stories of the strange and the macabre. And he wrote a series of books. I read them when I was much, much younger. One was called The Book of the Dam. One was called Low. I highly recommend them if you're into the strange and the unusual. And such was the sheer scale of supernatural activity that descended on ancient Devon in that specific period that Downs and Wright found themselves plunged into a dark, turbulent world. One that closely paralleled the menacing environment that threatened to swallow up John Keel as he investigated the turbulent situation at Point Pleasant, West Virginia. That's where the Mothman reports came from in 1965 to 1967. And in the same way that Keel had run-ins with the men in black, both Downs and Wright experienced something chillingly similar. Hang up phone calls in the middle of the night. And at that point, we're going to stop for this show. We will be back when once again we'll be talking about creatures of the night. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.